This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Until a few days ago, Senate Republican leaders had been saying they hope to vote on their version of the bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act before the July 4th holiday. Well, that plan went by the wayside amid opposition to the secretly drafted legislation from Democrats and from some Republicans as well.
Now, Senate leader Mitch McConnell says he hopes to have a revised piece of legislation ready for a full Senate vote by the August congressional recess. But it's unclear whether there will be enough changes to sway both moderate and far-right-leaning Republicans to vote for the bill. Barbara Zabawa is our health care reform contributor, and she joins us in the studio this morning. Welcome back to the show.
So glad to be here, Mitch.
So the Congressional Budget Office analysis of the Senate version of the Obamacare repeal came out this week, and it indicated that roughly 22 million Americans would lose health coverage, I think, within 8 years, if I'm remembering correctly. That's a million fewer, I think, than the House bill. But besides that, what is your take on, first of all, the differences between the Senate bill and the House bill, and maybe the entire process in the Senate that even got us to this point?
Yeah, the differences, I mean, to me, aren't that great. They're both tackling the coverage issues, the affordability of premiums, and cutting Medicaid, making Medicaid into a more of a block grant type program with caps on spending. And that's where most of the savings is coming from that will balance out the repeal of all the taxes that both the Senate and the House bills want to do away with. So those taxes were the revenue generators for the Affordable Care Act. And if they want to get rid of those, they got to find ways to balance and save money. And that money is coming from cutting funding to Medicaid and allowing states more flexibility in designing their health insurance markets, which means that it may become more unaffordable for a lot of people or unaffordable for some people. I mean, when we talk about unaffordability, we have to remember there are going to be winners and losers in all of these different proposals. The winners may be younger, healthier individuals who may have to pay less for health coverage, but the coverage may not be as robust as the coverage is now. And the people who are older and less healthy are going to pay more on average. So, you know, it depends on which group you're talking about. And these are all averages, of course. There will always be exceptions. You can always find exceptions to the rule, but average across the United States. So I don't really see much of a difference between the two bills. I think they're both aiming at the larger items of getting rid of those taxes and changing Medicaid significantly.
Yeah, there was a conversation earlier this week on NPR, not surprising that I would have heard this, but it was with a journalist who covered the healthcare reform process under Barack Obama first and now under Trump. And she said what's lacking this time in the conversations that she and her colleagues have had with congressmen and now senators is any conversation about how the legislation would actually impact people's health. It's entirely about the costs. And it sounds like it's borne out in what you're seeing as well.
Yeah. It's telling that a lot of the healthcare interest groups, the providers, the American Medical Association is an example, the hospital associations, are all opposed to these bills. Some of the insurers are also opposed, even though they would get rid of some of the taxes that are imposed on insurers, some of the restrictions that are imposed on insurers. There are still some insurers who have come out in opposition. So
just for reasons of they don't think this would improve people's health, or
well, I don't know of all the reasons why they're coming out opposed.
Yes, I'd have to ask them.
But. Yes, but I think that is also a difference because when the Affordable Care Act was passed in 2010, there was buy-in from the different industry groups, most of them, from what I recall, for that legislation, and it's not the case this time.
So we were chatting before we started rolling the tape, or the virtual tape that we have here in this studio. And one of the things that you were pointing out is that there's a lot that's in this bill and that was in the House bill that really is under the radar of a lot of people, aside from what this legislation would do to Medicare. There's a lot that people aren't talking about. What are some of the key areas that this bill addresses that really aren't getting the headlines?
Yeah. Well, one of the big things that is in both the House and the Senate bill is a reduction in funding, quite a significant reduction, I think even almost an elimination, if I recall, of the Public Health Prevention Trust Fund. And that is billions of dollars that go toward preventing health problems, chronic diseases, providing immunizations, helping people live healthier lives and communities have healthier conditions, you know, better water and, you know, reducing lead exposure, those kinds of things that are worked on by public health departments and community health departments and others interested in preventing illnesses from happening in the first place, which goes to reducing overall health costs. If we can keep people out of the healthcare system, we will see fewer expenses being paid out to the healthcare industry, and that's a good thing because health costs, I think everybody would agree, are enormous in this country. They're just enormous, and that's another thing that these bills really don't address are the underlying costs of care. Both the Senate and the House are focusing on how much do we as individuals pay for care, our premiums, our cost sharing, responsibilities in the form of deductibles or co-pays, but it's not getting at how much is being charged and why those charges are so high. And the prevention fund that's being cut would address some of that. So that's kind of ironic to me that it's happening, that they want to address the skyrocketing costs of care, but they're cutting something that would actually help in that area. So it's interesting to me that it's in there.
Let me ask maybe a fundamental question about the economics of healthcare, and maybe this is something that's just too complicated for us to answer in a couple of short sentences, but is it more complicated than just supply and demand? I mean, I guess the question I wonder is, if suddenly 22 or 23 million people don't have health coverage, I mean, clearly some of them are still going to seek health care, but then there are going to be some who just sort of fall out of the system. What do we know about what that might do to health care costs?
Well, I think the studies that have looked at that is, if we have more uninsured people, we're going to go back to hospitals having to write off a lot of debt. Because, yes, people will still seek care in emergencies, and that care isn't free necessarily. Somebody has to pay for it right now. And so how it usually works is if the person who seeks the care can't pay for the care, the hospital has to write it off as bad debt or uncompensated care, and then usually they have to raise prices for people who do have coverage.
And so, this presumably puts hospitals in a tenuous situation as well.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's not good news for them. They are going to lose a lot of people who are now using their services and have a means of paying for it. And with loss of people's health insurance, they're going to have more people who can't pay for the services that they provide.
One of the other aspects that you, I think, point to in this Senate legislation, which we should note as we're having this conversation, there are some frantic rewrites of the mm-hmm. Senate legislation going on in the hopes by some, Mitch McConnell and other Senate leaders would like to be able to bring this to the floor before the August recess now. So we don't know exactly what might be in these revisions, but one of the things that was in the version that you have in front of you is something impacting association health plans. What is that about?
Oh, yeah. So that's another provision I think is under the radar for a lot of the discussions on this bill. And this is a very popular item for both the House and the Senate in the Republican caucus to allow trade associations and those small entities or individuals who belong to a group to be able to assemble together and create a health plan that could be considered one large group instead of many small individual or small group plans. So the advantages of that for the group is that, you know, there are fewer regulations for larger groups, and the regulation is usually under the federal level instead of the state level.
Presumably some economies of scale here as well.
Yes, yes. And so it can be more affordable then for these individuals and groups to get together into one large group and buy a health insurance plan for all the members. And so the Senate bill does have a provision that would facilitate that ability of trade associations to form these larger group plans together. And that I know is something that would be of interest to a lot of different membership organizations.
So I feel like we've touched on this every time we've spoken about healthcare reform. What still seems to be missing is any kind of philosophical conversation about what the role of the government is in impacting the health of its citizens.
Yeah, I still don't think as a country we've come to a consensus on that issue. I think people have their opinions, you know, no government or the government should be single payer and use its bargaining power to help bring costs down. Another thing, you know, that neither of these bills is touching that the Affordable Care Act did try to address are some of the ways we pay for care. Neither the Senate nor the House bill are addressing or changing, I should say, those initiatives like trying to get more value from the dollars that we spend on healthcare. And I think that's a good thing. So really what these bills, again, are trying to do are take away all those taxes that were imposed on different people and industries and then take and change the Medicaid program so that it saves the federal government money in the long run and then change the way the individual marketplace operates.
Well, maybe the next time we talk, the needle will be pushed in a different direction. But
maybe.
Barbara Zabawa, it's always nice to see you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mitch.
Barbara Zabawa is a professor of health policy at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, the owner of the Center for Health and Wellness Law, and co-author of the book Rule the Rules of Workplace Wellness Programs. She's also our regular healthcare reform contributor. You can hear our past conversations at wuwm.com.